Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets in a tailspin. Greece is on the ropes. And is there a bounce coming? That's going to be pretty violent on the way up, just to shake out all these shorts. This and guest Frank Curzio and Peter Emanuel from TAS Professional. All this and lots more on episode number 264 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Hey there, gang. Andrew Horowitz. How are you? Starting the week of the 21st of May, 2012. And man, it has been an absolute disaster when it comes to the markets of late. They just can't hold up. It's interesting because we saw this almost identical time frame of when markets started to roll over last year, and I think even the year before possibly. You know, the old sell in May and go away? Well, that's kind of playing out pretty well, but this time it's a lot worse. In fact, if you look at the charts, you look at the numbers, we're down about 8% on the S&P 500 in the month of May alone, just this month. Dow Jones is down about 5.5% or so. And when you look at the Russell 2000, we're talking about 8.5%. But that's not the worst of it. Take a look at what's going on in Europe. Man, they had the worst month and the worst week of the year. And they're like looking like nobody wants them. That's the fact. Three times a charm, we always say, when things go and they kind of get better, then they get worse again, they get better, and then reality sets in. And that third time, if it ever happens, it kind of gets really ugly. So the big question is Greece going to leave the euro? Are they going to be asked to leave, or are they going to kind of leave on their own? They've already started to squawk a little bit and talk how, you know, hey, if you don't give us our money, we're just going to default, and hey, screw you. They really did. Something that has been thought about for a while has come to pass in verbal form recently. And, you know, it's interesting because there's been some discussion by Merkel is they're dismissing the claims that they said they want a euro membership referendum and talking about this. But the fact is that we're starting to hear a lot more flutter and a lot more lip smacking about the potential for Greece leaving. Question is going to be, as it always has been, is it orderly or isn't it? What happens to the euro? What happens to the eurozone? And more importantly, how do investors take it? That's going to be the biggest issue. Already it's being priced in. It looks like that there's going to be a big problem because when you look at the change of sentiment, the quick and rapid move down of markets. Yeah, we're seeing some things like the leading indicators didn't hold up too well, and clearly the Philly Fed was just horrible last week. Manufacturing index that everyone regards as the closest correlation to the GDP for the U.S. rolled down pretty hard last week compared to where expectations were, in fact. And on top of that, I got to tell you, the Fed minutes did not, I read the thing from cover to cover, I did not see any real significant talk about any kind of additional stimulus or monetary easing, even though Steve Liesman somehow managed to throw QE3 and QE into the conversation three or four times when he was analyzing it right after they were released. I think that was criminal. But anyway, we're seeing things like Capital Economics saying that their view is that the eurozone needs to break up and has become more widely accepted by many commentators still argue that in practical terms, it simply can't happen. So they just wrote a whole piece on this, and they are talking about what the process will do and how it will be complicated and disruptive. It's certainly not impossible and might actually prove necessary and worthwhile. So lots happening there, but I will tell you, we're going to get to our guest in a second. I did some analysis, and we really looked at the condition of the markets, which is clearly in a solid downtrend, we call it with our market trend indicator. But the thing that I think is interesting is that when we look at things like the Spearman, we look at a couple of different standard deviation analysis that we do, man, we are pretty oversold here. Again, I hate to use that terminology, but I want you to be set for a potential snapback on any good news here. And I think we may see one. Yeah, it may be a bear market kind of bounce or a dead cat bounce, whatever you want to call it. but it looks like it's going to happen. I want you to be ready because the next move will take back a couple of percent that was lost over the last week or so. Well, last week was much worse than that. But nonetheless, it looks to me as if we are sitting on some pretty overdone levels, panic selling, which may continue for a long time, but we may see some bouncing up in the meantime. So don't let that get you too nervous about holding on to a lot of cash right now. But at the same time, if you want to trade it like we do, well, there may be some opportunity there. And on Friday, we held the all-day Facebook blogging and bounce breaking out, all on Trigger Point Research. And you can find that directly. There'll be some links on the Disciplined Investor, and I'll show you a few things that we talked about. One of the big things was how basically a big dislike button goes on the Facebook IPO. It wasn't well accepted. The underwriters had to hold it up at the $38 level, and unless something miraculous changes, is going to be, you know, probably a cut down below the IPO level very shortly. And in the wake of that, we saw many of the secondary plays and the lookalike companies from other countries just get obliterated. Renren got hurt, Pandora, Zynga got smacked but good. Glue Mobile came down about 4% on the day. But there were stocks in that sector that were down anywhere from 15 to 20%. What we did right before the, right at the IPO point was to pick up a short of the social gaming ETF. Thinly traded, but we don't have a lot of it. It's SOCL is the symbol. And I thought that was an area that was kind of interesting to possibly hedge out some of the risk that was inherent. We own a little bit of Google, and that was even down about 3.5% on the news. So it was kind of a bad day overall, and the Facebook excitement really ended up being a dud, to say the least. Anyway, we have two guests today, and I thought we would get right to them and discuss some really important things. Frank Curzio, I want to ask about the markets and what his thoughts are. And I want to talk about some technical analysis with Peter Emanuel. He's the gentleman who, or one of the guys that we work with on creating this algorithm for Trigger Point Research and for some of the work that we do with our portfolios here at the Disciplined Investor and with Horowitz & Company. But I wanted you to take a look at, listen to some of the important points and some trading ideas that he and I talk about quite often. And I thought it would be a good time to bring him on. So let's start off with Frank Curzio, and let's see what he's got to say. And you know what I think about Frank, right? Right? So let's tell him what we think. And we have the great, the stupendous, the miraculous, the guy that knows things that most people don't know, Frank Curzio, all the way from the northern part of Florida, transplanted from New York, of course, with a resume that is quite incredible. He works with Stansberry Research right now, covers small caps and all sorts of other things, and a very dear friend of mine. And I'm not going to sing, but happy birthday to you, my friend.
Yeah, the big 4-0, man. So I'm getting up there. I'm catching up to you now.
Yep. Goodbye. Anyway, you've been doing a great job, actually. And, you know, we've talked over the last several weeks. And the reason I have you on so often, just to let you know, is because, of course, I get a lot of people that are like, got to have Frank on. And aside from that, the information that you can really give us and the depth of it is something really great. But I want to talk to you about the absolute disappointment and kind of the market view right now from a big picture, because it is simply ugly, I guess the best way to describe it.
Yeah, the markets have been really ugly, especially over the past month or so. I mean, May, go and sell in May and go away, right? We should have listened to that. We listened to it this year. And the last 2 years, we would have been okay. But I could tell you something. I'm actually buying stocks right now. I like the market, and there's one indicator that supersedes everything else right now, and that's the election indicator. And it's sell in May and go away usually works, except during an election year. And during an election year, the best performing months are usually June, July, August. So I'm actually buying here. I think there's going to be a lot of spending coming into the market. I can't see the market selling off too much more during an election year. And plus, we're seeing incredible valuations in things like the mining sector, the banking sector after J.P. Morgan. A lot of the banks came down, and some great valuations of small caps that have really, really come down tremendously over the past couple of weeks.
Tremendously is an understatement, don't you think?
It is, because you know what? You look at the S&P 500 and you say, wow, it's down 4 or 5%. But when you look at some of these small caps, some of the ones that I cover, they fall 20, 30% on no news. And these are companies that the insiders are buying. They're trading 25% below book value. So, you know, from a standpoint, if you're on the sidelines in cash, it's a really fantastic time to enter the market, especially since May. What is it? 10 out of 13 trading days, 11 out of 13 trading days, we've been down. It just looks terrible out there, and everybody's selling everything. But if you're really patient, I think now's the time to really scale in. I think we're going to have a good finish to the year.
Interesting, because the whole sell in May thing and go away, and you wonder if it's more psychological or if there's really something there. I mean, we can come into the fact that it's, okay, the end of the earnings season, so you got that seasonality going on. You know, you have the fact that it's the summertime and some in between after the big holidays and Easter and Christmas and all that stuff passes through. What is the deal? What's the real basic line behind that besides the nice rhyming phrase?
You know, I did a lot of research behind this too, and depending on the time frame, you're looking at which months perform the worst. So September is one of the worst months. May is actually one of the better months, believe it or not. But June, July, August are usually very bad months, except during the election year. They happen to be by far the best performing months during an election year, and that's really what I'm going on in terms of looking at that. But you have to pay attention to it, whether you believe it, whether it's just a saying that rhymes, because if you sold in May over the last 2 years, you were lucky, especially last year where the market came down a lot. If you're sitting in large caps, you're okay. But the Russell 2000 fell 30%, and the average Russell 2000, not the average small cap, fell 50%. So, I mean, you got wrecked if you were in the market last year during the summer. So, when you see it coming around, then you see the opening to May this year, now you're worried. You're like, I can't go through what I went through last year. We just got killed, and yes, the market came back and finished flat. But you know what? I stopped out of some stocks, and you just start asking yourself questions. But I really believe right now it's going to be different. I predicted that we will come down. We've come down a lot in small caps. I mean, we've been up every single month since September. This is the first month we're not up. So I do believe that it's a good buying opportunity. I've seen a lot of great buys out there. You have to be patient, and you have to be able to stomach it, because a lot of these stocks, especially looking at the mining sector, some of the silver companies, the good gold companies are down. You'll see them down 15-20% in a couple of days. I just think they're good buying opportunities right here.
Well, what we saw recently was the mining stocks and the gold stocks in particular just get is the word obliterated too harsh?
No, it's actually too easy.
When silver and gold came down dramatically, there was this unbelievable move of the miners. Obviously, you have the situation where when you have a drop in the gold prices, the margins are squeezed dramatically, and there's a certain price that they have to pay in order to dig it out of the ground and all. And then you saw the last couple of days, silver and gold, out of nowhere, by the way, really start jamming up nicely. And I thought that was kind of interesting that we saw that kind of a move on markets, and in particular with the gold miners. Is it a time to buy these things, or is it still time to just stay the heck away from them?
I think you have to be careful which ones you buy. There's a point right now where the whole entire market comes down. And when you see an entire market come down, it gives you an opportunity, especially for a good analyst, to really look at these companies individually and see which ones are better than the others. Because when the whole industry is down, everything gets killed. But you don't really want to go after some of the junior miners, which don't produce. But some of the ones that still are taking advantage of $1,550, $1,600 gold prices that are producing, that are trading cheap, that are able to their costs have risen along with the rest of the industry, but the low-cost producers, maybe like Yamana Gold on the silver side, First Majestic, fantastic companies where they're drastically going to increase growth. They're currently producing in great areas, politically friendly areas, great balance sheet, and just really, really good, strong companies in terms of some of the lowest-cost producers in the industry. So when you're looking at those companies, when you see those companies get nailed, I just think it's a buying opportunity. Those are two I'd be looking at.
Okay, so with regard to the earnings that we've seen recently, and there was a bit of a change. In the beginning of the quarter, we saw a really nice earnings move that we saw many companies beat and do well. For example, we saw Alcoa. Now, Alcoa is interesting because with Alcoa, what happens is that they usually see this big spike in the overall numbers, right? We see this great move in the aftermarket the next few days with Alcoa. They come out with a number that wasn't as terrible as people thought, I guess is the best way to describe it. And then what happens from there is it turns around and it just slides down ever so gracefully into the next couple of months. And Alcoa hit a low again. It was up above 10 and change, and then it hit 9. And then you have some of the other miners and some of the other companies that, didn't really play well. What's the story with this? Is it a global slowdown? What is the real inside of this?
it might just be management when it comes to Alcoa, because I listen to that conference call every single quarter. And I don't know if you knew this, but by the way, business has always been absolutely fantastic.
Fantastic.
All
business.
The time. So we're producing at 8 to 10%. You know, it's just everything's great, aluminum, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the CEO gets on there all the time. And every time I look at these numbers, I'm like, there's no way they're going to meet those estimates. They're just too aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're looking at what? You're looking at slowdown in China. The economic numbers have been very weak in the U.S. And, you know, I don't want to compare it to last year where we did see the massive decline, you know, the sell-in man go away, because there was a lot of recessionary fears there for the U.S. We're not going to hit a recession, but I don't think we're going to go 3% either. So, yeah, it's almost like a trading opportunity. When these things really get sold off, you have to buy them. And when they get up there, you really have to sell them. So I think right now it's just a great buying opportunity. I don't know if I'd be buying Alcoa here. I would just like to sit for the CEO to come out and be like, listen, you know, we want to lower estimates. And when he's optimistic, the analysts covering him tend to be optimistic as well. So their numbers are inflated. And when they come out with their earnings, and, you know, it's much harder to meet. Because, it's, you know, as you know as well as I do, maybe some of the listeners don't know, it's all an earnings game. I mean, you know, a company could increase their earnings by 50% year over year, but if they don't meet that estimate, it's going to go down 15%.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what the analysts out there believe. Right now, the analysts are still kind of optimistic on Alcoa, which is why you're seeing it miss estimates, and you know, it just keeps coming down.
Let's take us just a quick journey over to the Facebook discussion that we saw late last week. It was late in coming to the market. There was a lot of hype with it, of course. The shares were priced at 38. And it was the high range. We tried to get some shares pre-market, but that didn't seem to work too well. The fact is that, you know, when you look at the overall, you know, I don't know, it was, you know, questionable how much they issued on the market. So it opened up at, I don't know, the 40 range or something like that, kind of trailed down to 39 right about an hour after. But generally speaking, let's not talk about the actual price and all that. You know, what's your take on this? And is it do you think they did this wrong? Do you think they really played this wrong and issued too many shares and really overhyped it?
Depends which way you look at it. I mean, I think they did an absolutely fantastic job if you're a banker. I mean, how many times do you see IPOs come out, even LinkedIn, that went up 90%? That means, you know what, the bankers didn't really do their job. They could have sold more stock and brought more money into the company.
Mm-hmm.
These guys seem to nail it on here. You know, they went around everywhere and said, listen, this is where demand is. This is what we're going to raise the price of. And you know what? You're not really seeing the price take off like you see in other IPOs, which is, I think, a testament to the bankers and Facebook, where they got the pricing right, I think. Now,
Yeah. You
know, you said you wanted to buy it. You can go ahead and buy it now if you wanted to. So at the price that it came out at. But you know, you're looking longer term at this business. You know, you can never listen to a value investor evaluate this company, because it's
right.
Not, you know, it's almost like, you know, someone's trying to tell you, you know, Netflix, you know, a value investor talking about Netflix. It's just very difficult sometimes when the stock's at 200 trending higher. But, you know, they control half the internet users. I've done a lot of research on casinos and when it comes to marketing, and all you need to go to these casinos, if you go to Caesars like 3 times, and they put everything in the computer, they monitor you, where you're going, where you're spending, what room, the size of the room, whether you smoke, everything. And they basically filter into this computer, and they could pinpoint exactly, you know, what day you like to gamble the most, what month you like to travel. And this is just from going to a casino 3 times. And that's what they do in terms of marketing. Now, take Facebook. Facebook, you have people on there telling you exactly what they love to do, right? Everything. There's 50 things that they love to do, the games they like to play. And better yet, they even tell you exactly where they are. I just checked into Buffalo Wild Wings. Hey, tell them all my friends. So it's a marketer's dream when it comes to something like this. And you know, you're looking at a company like Zynga, which is, you know, generated, what is it, $400 million. One company is able to take that much advantage of Facebook. Imagine with all these other companies, which are already on Facebook, every Fortune 500 company, of how they'll take advantage of having 900 million, over a billion users pretty soon, and how you could just really force these advertising dollars into this company. I think it's definitely a different story. With that said, would I buy it here? I think you have to wait a couple months just to see, at least a couple quarters, to see how this company does.
Right. So a lot of the secondary plays on this were, you know, all watching, okay, where is Facebook going to play out? Where is it going to go? What's going to happen? And you know, now that we see that, you know, Facebook actually, you know, kind of went right down to its level of of support, you know, which was the $38 range, kind of midday, and then it came under ever so slightly, and then kind of moved around. You know, is this something that is going to be, in your opinion, a big tell for the markets?
I do. I think this is going to be a negative for the markets. I really do believe if this stock would have took off, it would have been great for the markets, especially since everything has been so negative. I mean, pessimism is just at its maximum levels right now, where it seems like the market's going down every single day in May.
It seems like it is.
It is, actually. Right? Like I said, 11 out of 13, 12 out of 14 now, as we're doing this podcast. But it's just amazing that, you know, you finally said, okay, at least the Facebook IPO is coming out. At least we have good news. And then it comes out at 38 and it trades below 38, you know, which is, you know, you're not used to seeing. And just for the average investor, they're going to be like, wow, what's going on? It just seemed like this thing was going to go rocket past $50.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is another negative, but we'll see. We'll see how it plays off. It would have been nice to really see this company get some more demand here in terms of market sentiment. I think it's going to hurt it, yeah.
So give me your take on the global economic situation.
Oh, my take on the global economic situation.
In two minutes or less.
I love when they do it in CNBC. They're like, okay, explain the difference between inflation and deflation. You got 10 seconds. And then they interrupt you, so you just say one word. But I think China is going to be fine. I think China has they've come down dramatically. Expectations are low. They've done a good job to control inflation. So I think we're near the bottom of that market. I don't see 6% growth. I see more like 8-9% growth going forward, if I had to guess a year from now. As far as Europe, very difficult situation. I mean, half of the Eurozone countries are in recession right now. You have Greece basically saying, you guys have to bail us out, but we're not going to take austerity measures.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's very difficult because a lot of banks within Europe, even here still, are leveraged to Greece. So you can't just let them default. But it's going to be difficult. I mean, I think, you know, it's a long-term problem. We've all known, right? We've said this all the time on our podcast, Andrew, that, you know, this is basically going to come back to bite us in the ass eventually. Well, you know, it's starting. I mean, it has to. We can't just keep printing money. Our deficits, even here, keep going up every month after month after month. We keep spending money like crazy. Eventually, you know, we're going to have to deal with this. In Europe, they're dealing with it, and there's no way around it. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. In terms of economic growth, you know, not all of Europe is bad, but most of it's bad right now. So, I think it's going to continue to be a drag, especially for the U.S. markets.
So, you know, when we look at a lot of the economics, and you know, if there was this, you know, we say sell in May and go away, but there was this big change, this big, you know, enormous change of sentiment that we saw in the beginning of this month compared to what we saw, I don't know, a few months ago. And everybody was buying in. And one of the things that really bothered me, and you know, is how much positive people were on data that was, you know, okay. And it seemed like they were just buying things to buy things and really not doing anything more than just kind of throwing money in. And I mean, is that the kind of feeling you got?
You know, people forget how bullish everyone was, especially on CNBC a month ago. I mean, everyone's telling, oh, you know, stocks, the best asset class. It's absolutely fantastic. And you're right. You know, it is the best asset class compared to so many other things right now. But it doesn't necessarily mean that stocks are automatically going to go up either. You have to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
So it is amazing how much sentiment has changed. And we've seen these extreme levels like every 4 or 5 months now where it's just, you know, everyone's like, you got to get out of the market. It's absolutely horrible. And then like times like this, you can't find anybody bullish. Usually this is a good time to invest. And a month ago, everyone's saying, you know, you got to be buying stocks. You got to be buying stocks. And, you know, if you did it, you're getting crushed over the past month. And you know how it is. You know, when you see just one of these, you know, downturns where you're down 12 out of 14 days, you know, stocks can go down 20-30%. It hurts, you know. So, and it hurts. I don't care who you are, who you know, what you're doing. It's difficult when the market gets crushed like that. If you're a long-only investor, chances are, no matter what stocks you own, you know, you're going to get hit. So sentiment has changed a lot. I just think, like I said earlier, you know, the expectations are really low right now. I think it's a good opportunity to start picking away.
Yeah, I mean, we have been playing both sides of the aisle. It was interesting this week with all the down moves of everything. We were actually doing pretty well in holding up, really no losses at all during the week. And then Thursday came, and Thursday was like, that was a rough day. It was hard to get away from anything that was, you know, we had a put on. We actually took the put off yesterday. A little bit early, probably, but you know, granted, it's you never time that exactly right. But we made, you know, about 100% on that S&P put. And then you look at things like you know, some of the shorts that you could pick up. I mean, some things just, were obliterated. And what's interesting is they were really doing well on some of their numbers, but yet their outlook was negative. For example, Apple. Apple's a good example. Apple was, you know, it filled the gap, came all the way down to 530-ish. It was way up there. And then all of a sudden, you know, it came down and it started coming down and coming down and coming down and coming down. And it was really fascinating, in my opinion, how you know, there was this kind of change in sentiment. And the change was, in my opinion, different than what I had expected. I would have expected there was a dramatic move that was something different with their fundamentals. But it wasn't, was it?
No. It has nothing to do with fundamentals, to be honest with you. I mean, like I said, if you're looking, look at J.P. Morgan, the banking industry. I mean, J.P. Morgan, really bad, you know, I'll be nice and say just a mess up. But, you know, look what happened to the banking industry now. You know, these banks, especially large cap banks, their balance sheets are stronger than they've ever been. They're very cheap based on historical levels. But right now they're trading at you know, extremely cheap levels. They've all come off because they've been lobbying. If you pick up the Wall Street Journal, a lot of people don't like to read the Wall Street Journal. It's kind of boring. But almost on a weekly basis, you're seeing the big banks meet with Fed officials, talk about regulations, how we should ease regulations, and then boom, you come out with a $2 billion loss. You know, now the Volcker Rule is back on the table. So it's just amazing how, you know, just a couple of few events can just change the whole landscape of certain industries sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it really doesn't have to do with earnings. It's more it's sentiment. People just, you know, running out of the market. They see $2 billion losses and problems in Greece and Spain again. They're like, all right, I got to get out of the market.
Yeah, there's been some really interesting lines of support that have been broken, though. And I think that's the biggest issue. You know, you see the S&P 500 trading at, 1,300 and the Dow come down, 1,000 points from where it was. That's kind of spooky stuff. And the fact of the matter is, I agree, there was really not much volume. Maybe, volume doesn't matter. No, volume matters a whole heck of a lot. And the fact of the matter is that don't be swayed by the fact that, you know, when you have volume that is very light in going into something, you know, the fact of the matter is that if it goes up on light volume, it comes down. And when it comes down, usually volume's a lot hotter. And that causes a lot of problems. And I think that's some of the things that have happened recently. I mean, that's a big issue that's gone on, but we'll see. I know you have limited time here. Anything you want to mention in closing? I think that really we need to be looking at some interesting stocks.
Again, you know what? I think it's definitely a time to start picking away. And, you know, I'd actually be a little bit more aggressive than it. It's definitely a time to buy stocks. You know, the whole sell in May and go away thing, I know that, you know, over the past 2 years, if you did it, you've done great. And right now it seems like that's happening. But from valuation perspective and also a growth perspective, you never want to buy a stock simply based on valuation. Believe me, I know from experience because, you know, you get your head handed to you.
Right.
You want to have some kind of growth catalyst. And there's a lot of stocks out there that do still have their growth intact. In terms of technology, in terms of some of the mining stocks, where they're producing, they're going to see a lot come online over the next couple of years. There's just a lot of good opportunities out there if you're patient. If you're scaling into some of these stocks and intend on buying them over like a 3-4 month period, instead of buying 1,000 shares, buy 200 here, 200 next month, 200 the following month, and scale in. But on this sell-off, we're seeing some really, really good companies get nailed. And you know, I'm just, I feel like a kid in a candy store right now. I'm looking forward to recommend a lot of the stocks, at least for my newsletters.
I hear you. Frank Curzio, Stansberry Research. Hey, I appreciate you coming on, and you and I are going to talk soon. Happy birthday. Everybody send Frank a happy birthday message. He loves that stuff.
No, not really.
Bombard him.
Thanks, Andrew, for having me on.
All right, I'll talk to you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Now, our second guest is someone special, someone who I've known a while, and I really want you to meet him. He's new to the show. His name is Peter Emanuel, and he's the director of sales and, more importantly, of training at TAS Professional. Now, let's kind of set this up. TAS Professional, who is that? You know, Trigger Point Research, we talked about how we have a joint venture with TAS Professional and created these algorithms to find the sweet spot, if you will, on when it is appropriate to enter a position, exit a position, et cetera. And I want to talk about some of the really cool tools they have, because these are some things that you as traders may not be aware of. Some of them are available on certain places like TradeStation, maybe Bloomberg, definitely, and a few others. But, you know, I thought we'd get into the nitty-gritty of exactly how this works and why you need to rethink some of your perspective on utilizing, I'll call them, The old stodgy tools, like just a moving average. So anyway, Pete, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for having me today, Andrew.
Hey, it's great. Listen, Pete. Pete grew up, by the way, in Long Island like me, so you hear a little bit of that Long Island tinge come through here. So, Pete, you know, one of the things, I know you do a lot of training and you do a lot of teaching of this and, you know, the technique, but I want to kind of really explore the whole idea of the difference between what makes a, a level, quote unquote, that you have developed and that we have kind of co-worked together in coming up with this algorithm. But, you know, compared to, let's say, I don't know, a moving average or, you know, maybe even a MACD signal, something like that. So kind of just go over the basics of what we developed when it came to the algorithm to finding out levels.
Well, you know, Andrew, the real basis behind it is some of these older styles of trading, for instance, using your Fibonacci numbers or your MACDs and so forth, stochastics. They're really old school studies that, although they do work, they are really something that kind of has gone to the side of with other the new proprietary tools that some of these really good firms are coming out with. They bring a different view, a different analysis that if you don't understand them and you're really not looking at them, you're really doing yourself a disservice. And that's really a big difference between your, you know, which I train these institutional traders. They don't want to be looking at the same old stuff that everybody's been looking at for such a long time. They're really starting to understand that these new computerized techniques that have been developed, say, by us and others, that bring another picture, another viewpoint to the overall investment strategy. And I think that's really the biggest difference is, you know, understanding how to use them.
Yeah, and one of the things is that I think the big issue is the computer that you just mentioned there, because it could actually calculate these incredibly complex calculations, right, utilizing so many different measures in seconds, right? Where it would take you a week, a month to do it by hand. So one of the ones that we co-developed was this whole idea of, we call them trigger points, but support, right, and resistance levels. The old days was, okay, I'm taking a chart, a daily chart, weekly chart, and I see, okay, there's a peak, I got a trend line, okay?
Right.
Or there's a, oh, look, it hit a low here, it hit a low here, there's three bottoms. Okay, so I draw a straight line across horizontally, and there I have support, right? That was kind of like the old game. And then you look at some volume things and all that. The difference, though, is that you were never quite sure, well, is this the time it falls through? Is this time it pops up? Is this the time that happens? And the difference in this technique, which kind of gives you trend line concept, you know, directional issues, explain how, we call it internally boxes, but talk about how the trigger point levels that we set up are kind of calculated without all of the... without the complexity of the algorithm.
You're talking about the VAT boxes, for instance. That is a big difference. You know, when you do your trend lines and, you break out your ruler and it shows you with your numbers where things should break through or break down or break up, those are basically, there's only one little formula or calculation that you're basically developing, although one on paper. In what we do in these VAT boxes that are created by the computer, they're looking at so much data from such a long history. Like, you know, you look at a chart, you know, and you got your ruler and all things only say 5 inches long, and you're looking on a daily chart. It can only go back so far. Ours can pull data in from the 70s, and the more data that goes into these calculations gives an enormous amount of information that's put into the formula that develops these what we call VAP boxes. It's value at price. And what they do is they give you a very strong value area that you have a very strong idea of how long that value area. A value area may last a week. It may last 3 or 4 weeks. And you get a look into the future of where that value area is based on volume and price, with standard deviations of about 82% or so, or standard deviation of a 1, but 83% or 82% of that heavy volume will be on what we would call peak of distribution area inside that value line, value area. And those trends, you can really, those trend unfair highs and unfair lows and your peak of distribution into the VAP area give you a lot of information about where the what how to trade it, when to trade it, and when to stay away from it.
Right. All right. Now, let me put the brakes on. Pull back a second here, because Pete mentioned a few things that we kind of talk about internally, but really what we provide so that it's the same lingo is we call them high volume nodes, support areas, resistance areas, just to keep it all in the same lingo so everybody understands what we're talking about here. Okay.
Yes, unfair low would be a resistance. Right. Unfair high would be So unfair low would be support. Unfair high would be resistance, and then the middle would be your peak of distribution or.
Right, but the important thing is this. There's also something else that's really cool, is that when you look at, let's just go back to that line you drew for a second, right? So we drew that line across the bottom. We saw three, you know, the standard ruler that we have a line across the bottom or the top, but the bottom here, and you, that's going to be a bounce area and all. The question is, how strong is that bounce going to be and where does it go, right? So that it could be a bounce. It could be, I don't know, if you have a $10 stock and let's say it goes up $1 to 10%, that's great, but is it going higher? Where's the next point of it? You could say, well, draw another line across. But the issue is, how fast is that going to move? So, for example, we take a stock that has started to break down, and the question is, well, where is it going to break to? You say, well, it's going to break down here, but do you know if it's going to happen over a 1 week, 2 week, 5 week, 10 week period, or is this thing going to just ramp down quickly in a fast zone, as we call it, right?
Right.
And the nice thing about this development is you can actually, in a way, look at it because you could see visually, we see visually, the amount of, let's call it, interest, the amount of buying interest or selling interest that's there at any given price, and you can see where there's a lack of that. And a lot of times you'll see that as a gap in a price, right?
Right.
So you say,
right.
You know, in the old lingo we call it a gap fill, right? A gap fill.
That's right.
I mean, but the question is, how do you know where there's other potential gap fills that aren't on a chart with a bar? You follow what I mean, right?
Right.
So that's kind of the really cool thing. That it's kind of an X-ray of this. Now, when you look at these, when you're looking at factors that will help you adjust your outlook for a stock or an index, let's talk about the Dow Jones, for example. Okay? And we just talked a little while ago that you said on the weekly chart, it's starting to break down.
But that's correct.
So you look at weekly, but what else do you look at? What is the sequence of time frames that you're looking at?
Well, first and foremost, you get a long-term picture, if you will, of the index. And if you, and in my case, I usually go to a weekly chart, and you get an overall view of the trend. Okay. With, and then you look at it based upon how it is, the current price is acting in regard to the, these, what we call VAT boxes, these value areas. I think this week, I think on the 17th or 18th, the long-term trend has finally broken through that support level. So when you get, so then when you go and look at it, say on a daily chart, you know that you can lean on that understanding in the back of your mind. You already know that the long-term trend is actually breaking down. Now, when you go and look at the daily chart and you see it breaking down, it's a degree of confirmation. And there's just no confirmation of any of these things. In other words, as it's breaking these faster moving markets at 60 minute, the support that it broke down is very valid, and it can be a very fast moving market away from that support that support level.
Right. So it's kind of like, you know, one of the things you want to now look at is, okay, what, you know, you have what do you do now, right? So a lot of people out there buy a stock that they like, or they see it going up and all that, and they take a profit oftentimes. And this is not just, unless you're a long-term holder of something, you usually leave some money on the table. Let's be honest. You're always going to leave a little bit on the table on either side, right? It's just, you're not going to hit the highs, you're not going to hit the lows. But, you know, you're going to, you know, hopefully get, we'll call it the meat out of the move. That's the hope.
Right.
But what happens, and what have you seen in a lot of your training when it comes to individuals and how they handle their stocks, and what are they using to measure stop losses, when to add on, when to hold? I mean, what's the kind of the feel you have out there?
Well, that's a very, 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 very good question. And that is really the difference between a successful trader and a real rookie amateur. And when I say rookie amateur, I've seen people that have been trading for 30 years and they still make the same stupid mistakes.
They every day the market makes all of us look like
winners quickly, and they just hold on to their losers because they're not really, they're not using the tools and they're not adhering to a rules-based methodology. And that's the key to the whole thing. It's understanding what when you use our tools, for instance, you will be kept in a trade. We may not hit the top, but I can tell you, you will not be sitting around watching the thing come right back down. And you will not sell just for instance because you know you're up 30% or you're up 40%. You look at the value areas, and when you're trading up and above them, and new value areas are being created, there's no reason to sell when you're when it's rolling over and the rules based. Our programs, for instance, are very rules-based. When we have monetary stop losses that trail the buy signals, when they're hit, you're out. And a lot of times when you say, well, you know, you went long in this position and you were stopped out immediately. Why did that happen? That is the way it's supposed to happen. You're never supposed to be sitting here with a position and without any rules based, if you have no rules as to when to cover, you can't just say I'm going to cover when I'm down 10%. That's not the way it should be. You cover the trade when it's going against you as soon as it breaks support.
Right,
you're out. Case closed.
Yeah, and that's
no
an interesting question.
Don't try to go, well, maybe it'll bounce back. There is none of that. Cover the position and then reposition on another trade when it says to buy.
Yeah. So here's a couple of things I want to mention to you. First of all, you know, you look at, I think the strategy that you mentioned that a lot of people do, we call the HOPE strategy. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, of course. I've lived it for many years.
Yeah, it's the hope and pray strategy. Oh, I hope it comes back. I hope it doesn't. You know, and that, you know, when you're on the edge of a position, for example, you just said the Dow Jones just broke down. I can't tell you how many times back in 2011, you were at a breakdown point, right?
Yes.
And you thought that you got confirmation, it all looked good, and then you got your nose taken off if you went short.
Right. Well, if in 2011, and I'm looking at the charts, on our tools, you know, there on most of the times where it turned against the support level, you were out right away. I mean, there was no reason to ride them down. You know?
Right, but I'm saying on the other side, if you were short in 2011, there are several times that all of a sudden the market just whipsawed the other direction. You took the markets went 5% down in a matter of, I don't know, a week and a half, 2 weeks, right? And then in a day, it went up 3%.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of, those are hard things to manage on any system, by the way. But the thing that I think is really interesting is, you know, we sent an alert out, as you know, on Herbalife short, okay?
Yes.
And it worked out extremely well. It was great that Einhorn came on, made that comment that, you know, hey, Herbalife, and we don't know if he owns it or he shorted, and the stock came down, I don't even know how much, 40% or something like that. And that was a great trade. And, you know, we told people in a follow-up, hey, listen, you know what? We're kind of leaving that zone right now. Cover your position here. Part of it, you know, because you have a choice, you know, depending on where you are, depending on how aggressive you are, cover the position part of it and then possibly get out of it. We talked about a possible breakup. We actually, for our clients, we actually went long before the Iris Own conference. And when he didn't mention it was up 20-something%, it was a great little, you know, play on that. But, you know, the thing that's really, I think, important that you mentioned there is, you know, to find the levels and play by the rules, because it's like, if anybody's out, this is a really bad example, but I think it's an interesting one to kind of look at from a trading style. You play blackjack. If you ever sat next to somebody that felt that they were going to get a high card, and they didn't take the card even though they should have based on the rules of the play, right, you want to stand up and strangle them. You know,
yeah,
not because
it
may, you know, not because they may throw you off, but you know, wait a minute, why are you not playing by the rules? And then meanwhile, the next thing you know, you know, you get a card, and it was their card, it was low, and you got a 21 or whatever, and you say thank you to them. But it's so many times, the difference between the house and the player is that the house plays by absolutely strict rules that are calculated to benefit the house by a small margin. And they always say that the casinos are not built on the backs of winners. Right?
That's right. No, it's a very, very well taken point. They play by a set of rules.
Right. Now, sometimes
and if they don't play by, and what happens when they don't play by those rules?
Yeah.
A dealer?
Yep.
They're gone.
They're gone. But there are times that you can finesse the rules. I mean, there are things that give you better chances. For example, the dealer can't double down, but we can. Now, the double down supposedly on certain cards is a best, you know, the best way to make money in blackjack.
Right.
You know, so I don't know what we can compare that to exactly, but we could say something like, you know, that would be the equivalent of margin maybe. I don't know what that is. But
no, what that would be a very good example of is, and it's a very well-taken point, is when we signal a short position, for instance, okay? And let's just say you made the call. Well, when you get a bounce back up to the support level that it came off of, on our program, is you add to your short position.
Right, exactly.
That's like
exactly.
doubling down.
Exactly. Or for that matter, if you're long and it comes down to support, you add on the bounce up, on the pivot above the support level. Yeah, that's a good point that you make there.
And exactly. And it's your choice. And if you're looking at other tools that we have, and we have Navigator and so forth, that we have other tools that are up on while you're looking at you know, say the VAP or whatever. There are other tools that have other indicators that will tell you whether you have triple confirmation on this trade. So we're long here and long down here. So when you get an opportunity to add to the position as a long comes back down to the support or to the resistance, the higher end of the chart, you would add to that position.
Right. Exactly. Or for that matter, as you're when you're on a street. Now let me give you another analogy. Let's go right back to blackjack for a second here. You do money management in blackjack. When you're winning the first hand, you take it off, you play the same amount. You win the second hand, maybe you bump it by a half. Then you bump it by, you keep on winning, and you pyramid, so to speak, right?
Right.
And
right.
The same thing is that if you see something breaking up and you take a position in it and then it passes through another zone, you add to that position. Mm-hmm. And then you're kind of both sides. One of the things I want to mention, because it may be a little confusion going on here, is that while this is a joint venture, okay, and we have basically we are over what we're doing with the joint venture here is providing alerts and research and reports and all that, and we have some other things coming out for market timing services and all that. We have our own business as a money manager separate and aside from that. TAS has theirs as training and is also institutional tools. There is information over at TASProfessional.com. And we'll put a link on the website to get there. A lot of these are available, unfortunately, on pro packages like Bloomberg and a few others. You can get them in other places, too, and you can take the training, et cetera. What the whole idea was, and Pete, you know this well, is that we wanted to make it so that it was a lot easier, so that you didn't have a lot of consternation training, even though that's... We want training because Pete, that's what he gets paid to do.
Training is not a bad thing.
Right. But what we do is we kind of take some of that out and give you just the alerts automatically as they come up through our system, through scrub data, through like a Bloomberg and all, because, there's differences. But, still you should take a look at some of the things that are available and you'll see some similarities because of some of the things that we co-developed over at taskprofessional.com. What is the... when you look at, if you can pull up a chart here, I'm not sure what system you're looking at, but take a look at, for example, silver for a second. I want you to take a look at this. Look at SLV, the ETF. Okay. One of the things I pounded the table about, I don't know, it was 8 months ago that you got a short silver. I mean, I pounded it, stood on the table when it was up. Remember that big flush higher to 40-ish? I said, short.
We're short here and we're still short.
So you're still short. See, we went long on that on Thursday. Now, I didn't send out an alert. I'm talking about my portfolios, different kind of...
Not a bad trade, Andrew.
Yeah, trade.
It's teetering right at the top of resistance
right.
of a brand new chart that just got fired
right
here on the 17th.
You're looking at daily?
On the daily, that's
okay,
correct.
Good. Yep,
we've
okay.
been short since 3:15.
But now visually,
and it keeps bouncing back up into resistance areas. But now it's the first time I can see it breaking up back into the value area, and it's trading at the top of that here.
Now, what happens if it, let's say, breaks up a bit from here about the potential trade?
Well, that's a very, very good question. And as and according to our rules,
right,
if this trade were to break above this level, which is right at 28.24, our short, by definition and rule, has to be covered.
Right.
That doesn't mean we go long, but right, that means, okay, let's now we're trading above the resistance level, so that means we're above a value box. And typically when you have any price movement above or below those value areas, it means that the price will move quickly away from that. So in a case breaking up, it will move quickly up. If it's breaking down through the resistance, it will go quickly down.
But what I like to see is, now I want you to look at the chart a little bit further, though. If it does break up, you see that big open gap?
Yes. That's,
you see that?
Yeah, that's another very good point. Is once it breaks up, it has there's a lot of holes that it can go right through, clearly back up to, 30. Well, you could clearly go back up to 33 easily.
Yeah, 31 is what our target is, something like 31
or so. Yeah, 31. I can see that. Definitely right at 31 is a long, one of the things on our tools is the longer a box is, there's narrow boxes and wide, which represents high volatility, which is what we're in right now. And then there is what would look like longer boxes, value areas. Those are very strong support and resistance areas. And as we see it, it's at 30, 33.
The other one I want you to take a look at is Chart Industries, GLTS. No, GTLS. Sorry, I don't know. GTLS.
GTLS?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Chart Industries. Yeah, I think, didn't you have a trigger point come out on
yep,
this?
Yep, we sent an alert on that a couple of days ago.
Yes.
Obviously, it was a little bit higher then. It's lower. We sent a short on it.
Now, this thing is completely breaking down.
I mean, I see some support at 60.
There's some support at, a little bit of support at 62. And 61, and then it's at 57.
Right. One that we got stopped out of, unfortunately, was Buffalo Wild Wings. That was kind of an interesting one that I thought was, going to see some significant downside. Goldman Sachs. I'm trying to think of the other one that we saw that was a really great. Oh, GNC was great. Take a look at GNC. We called a long on this about two Fridays ago. Now, it came
yes,
down a little bit with the markets, but look at this top end breakout.
Wow. On the daily, yeah, we went long down in here at, when did you come out with, at 30?
Well, we came out, it was like
35-ish.
It was like, yeah, right.
And
that,
it
yeah,
broke out. I think, where did you come out with your trigger point?
It was right around there. It was right with that. It was about 35-ish.
Right. I remember that. And it clearly broke right through all the boxes. But it's been very, very choppy.
Yep. That's because it has nothing there. There's nothing. That's the whole, it's good and bad. Right.
We just got stopped out on a long.
Yeah. Well, we actually sent a further alert because we hit our top end and sold it at the close to the high there, and then came back down, and now we actually look to add a little bit onto it.
It's still trading. This closed at 36 in here. Yeah. It's trading below a value box, but it's a very short and very wide one, and it's in place until 5:28, only another just the end of the week or so.
But I want you to look at something. Do you have the high volume node on there? This is a line that we put. There's a special line that we put on our charts that shows the high volume node, which is like the super highest volume going back to the last several swing trades. You see that?
I don't have it on my screen, no.
Well, let me tell you, it's at 35, and it bounced right off of there perfectly, which is also coordinates to the low part of the previous, we always go backwards and look backwards and look backwards.
Yes.
Of the previous level, so there was a lot of support there, and then it bounced right back up.
Yes, I see that.
You know?
You mean the support at what price? 38?
35.
35, it bounced right off that. Went right
well,
back
35,
up.
Yeah. there's an unfair high and there's an unfair low at the same price and a high volume node right there.
Right. The unfair high was at 41.46.
Right. Interesting. Anyway, these are kind of things that we send out. If you haven't seen the charts, I'm going to put all these charts. Let me just write this to GTLS. We put the Dow Jones Industrial Weekly. I'll put mm-hmm. up on the website. SLV we'll put up there. What else did we say? Anybody else? Buffalo, but we said that was I thought there was somebody else. Anyway, we'll put those all up there. Now, we'll also put a link to TAS Professional, TriggerPointResearch.com. This is really how the retail investor gets the, you know, all of this, because a lot of the things that we haven't talked about, there's probably about five or six or seven different key indicators and algorithms that are blended in here that we use to create the alert, which, by the way, we added another 35 stocks in the universe just this week, brand new for next week, as well as a variety of the gold stocks that are finally starting to base out. And some silver stocks and some metals. So that's kind of an interesting little play that we're going to add to the Trigger Point Research alerts program that you can go over and check out. But we'll put all the links here. Peter, I know you have some free videos. Do you have something? What do you have that you can spice up the audience with? What?
Well, we do. We have some very, very good videos that are done with recent securities and so forth. It's on our website at tasprofessional.com. And it talks, they're short, anywhere from about 2 to 3 minutes up to, I think the longest one's about 11 minutes. And it goes over how to interpret, read, how to use the tools to better yourself in trading. Discusses the iRatio tool, the Navigator, the Intelligent Breakout, your VAP, which is the volume at price. And our TAP, which is the traded price, which is used for the currencies.
Right, because there's no volume on that.
So there's quite a lot of videos. It gives you a lot of good information. It goes through the concept of market profile that was developed by Peter Stottlemyre. The guys from our company worked extensively on the floor of the Chicago Exchange and worked with Peter Stottlemyre and brought this to a practical application where people can put these same tools that the institutions are trading with. I just look at these, and most people that I show to, they just can't imagine how they could trade without tools, good, current, new stuff that gives them a little bit different view of what's going on.
And I'm going to tell everybody seriously something I want you to take away from this discussion. It's really important, okay? The tools that we're talking about here, because many of them are on institutional style platforms and not totally available all the time to retail, or retail doesn't know about it. This is interesting because if you think about it, if you want to trade profitably, at least trade with the pros, don't trade against them. And if you have more information about how they're utilizing, what they're utilizing and how they're trading, that's how we view it. We view this as a kind of an inside look at what the pros are doing. Yes. Because we could play along with them to a certain degree. And, you know, it's kind of, if you ever look at the charts that we put up, it's a little bit freakish how some of the charts really call it in a different way than you've seen before and kind of have an advanced, you know, look at this. Not all the time, not all trades work, but if you can get a chunk of them that work and you know, kind of go with the winners and stop the losers and then come back to it. And that's another thing I think a lot of people don't do is, you know, once they sell something, they're out of it forever. You know, they don't want to get near it again. It's like, that stock burned me. Yeah, like the stock knows who you are.
You know, Andrew, one of the things I want to say, what really kind of, it's one of my pet peeves is that when you actually said a trade didn't work. The only time a trade does not work is when you don't have the knowledge or the rules-based methodology to sell it quick. When a trade's wrong, you're wrong. Get out. You're only really wrong when you don't get out and you're sitting there looking at this thing with, you know, an X amount loss. Whereas when you get the indicator to buy and it works, you hold it. When you get the indicator to sell, to buy, and it doesn't, when you, as it's called, doesn't work, it's not that it didn't work, it's that you didn't follow the rules.
Right. And again, you know, one of the big things is, I think the difference is that what you're hearing is the difference between what a value investor would talk about. For example, we've had several value investors on the show over the past, and you see them a lot on TV, and they talk about, I'll give you one example, Hewlett Packard. Hewlett Packard is a great value that's cheap and all that. I'm not saying this, they're saying this, okay? Matter of fact, at the DH Unplugged weekly spreadsheet that we put up, we're up 23% on the short on Hewlett Packard, and I'm still surprised it keeps going down, by the way, even with their now, we'll see what happens with their announced 25,000 layoff that they're looking to do in the restructuring,
right?
Which is a lot of people, by the way. But here's the deal. If you look at Packard at 30 and you're a value investor and you like it at 30, and you're really not dealing with the charts, you're dealing with the fundamentals, at 25, you even love it more, so you buy more. 24, picking up more shares. 23, 22, 21. And then you're like, okay, I think this is the greatest stock in the world. You have no vision as to anything. And one of the biggest flaws, in my opinion, of value investing, which, by the way, can pay off in the long haul because it's all market-based and 80% of stocks move in the direction of markets anyway, so you got to kind of look at that as a big picture.
Right.
And the big thing is that, you know, you may be right in picking this up at the low points and all that, but you're not seeing obvious, you're going against the crowd. You're not doing what everybody does. You know, you're not following the trend. You're walking across the street, or you're actually driving down a road the wrong way, and you wonder why you get into an accident. So you have to blend all that, and that's the kind of things that we always talk about on the show since the last 3-4 years is you got to blend the quantitative, the fundamental, and the technical together, and that builds a better mousetrap. When Hewlett-Packard is going to be a good stock to own, whatever that is, you know what? The charts will start to show it, and if the fundamentals also are solid and been solid, you know what? You got a great opportunity at that point. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely. No question about
it. But you know what? You could have the greatest company in the world, the absolute greatest company in the world, take a crap because it's just something else that you don't know about, and you're not going to find out on the fundamentals for at least another quarter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the charts will always tell you before the fundamentals are out.
Right, so you want to have a strong fundamental stock. I mean, you could play some flyers here or there. You know, I mean, there's some things that, you know, we put out an alert on Pandora that really worked out nicely, and then it came back down. And, you know, Pandora has some earnings next week, and it's going to be wild and volatile and all before that. But you know what? That's the exception. You know, you want to have, when you're running a portfolio, different than just trading. Again, that's different too. When you're running a portfolio, you want to, you know, if you stick to the solid companies, even in a very bad market condition, you know, eventually they'll come back. You could look at the lows from many of these stocks and all those things from, you know, back in 2008, 2009, and the solid ones came back. But you know what? If you held them, you could have been lost by 75% or 60%. Look at what happened with Caterpillar, for goodness sakes. $35 it was at one point. So, you know, look at some of the coal companies. I mean, I can't believe Patriot Coal's at $3, $3.50 or something like that. I just saw it at $6 and change recently. You know, and
coal's not going away.
Yeah, coal's not going away, but it's not the time to buy it either. Natural gas. Look, natural gas up 35% since the low. Okay, that's great. Why? Who knows why? Is it a Chesapeake issue? Is it some people are finally playing into it? Is it because all of a sudden the weather is changing? Whatever the reason is. Anyway, Peter Emanuel, TAS Professional. At taskprofessional.com. Check out his stuff. We'll put links on our website. We'll put charts of these to show you some of those zones that we talked about, and I'll mark them up a little bit so that we could see that. And I know, Pete, we weren't going to really talk about this, but we have the, I guess we can mention it, we're working on the market timing report as well. That's going to be a monthly subscription for market timing based on the various indicators that we have that are going to be broad markets, right? So that's going to be kind of cool coming out. And then we have the sector, ETF sector allocation models coming out as well. A lot of these things are coming out. And of course, we've been launching and working with the pre-earnings reports, which right now are still free until we for the ones that we're putting up. If you want the full subscription, it's different. Anyway, thanks for joining us. I really enjoyed it. We have to do it again in the future. And keep up the great work.
My pleasure, Andrew. Thank you for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. And we're running out of time, so we'll end it right there. Again, just stop by thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We'll have all the chart information up there, and we will have some additional information on how to get to the guests and all that. We have Jack Schwager coming up in a couple of weeks on Market Wizard. He has a brand new book out called Hedge Fund Market Wizards, How Winning Traders Win. Looking forward to it. And if you have any questions, just send them in to me at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. That's what I'm here for, and I hope that you check out Trigger. Our trigger trading type of models that we have over at Trigger Point Research. You'll like it, I promise. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.